Welcome to Burn News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burnnews.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to our latest Burn News Facebook Live interview. I'm here today at the Ministry of Finance with the Finance Minister, Bob Richards. Minister, thank you for sparing some time in your busy schedule. It's much appreciated.
My pleasure.
I'm going to start off with what's happening a few hundred miles away in America. And we've seen Donald Trump, President-elect Donald Trump, talking recently about cutting corporate tax from its current, I think, world high of 35% to something like 15%. Mm-hmm. And recently you had the Fiscal Responsibility Panel report, which actually talked about the potential threat from the Republican Party and Donald Trump, and also from Brexit. How concerned are you for Bermuda, and its particularly its reinsurance American business, about Donald Trump's corporate tax pledge?
Well, I think that candidates, particularly in the United States context, pledge before an election and what he can actually do once he becomes president are two different things. Not to say that it isn't a concern to us. We keep a very close watch on what happens in the States. I think insofar as I'm concerned, previous to this last U.S. election, we could sort of almost rest assured that the status quo was locked in because of the gridlock in Washington. Mm. Well, there's no more gridlock,
at least
no formal gridlock anyway.
He's got both houses.
Well, it is politics, so people will find a way to disagree on things. It requires us to be more vigilant, and we have people that are friends of ours, also stakeholders in Bermuda that have contacts in Washington, D.C., are keeping their ears close to the ground so that we can have an idea of what's coming on the pike. I think that we just have to wait and see, sort of like Brexit. It doesn't make sense getting yourself too exercised about this until you can have some idea of where it's going.
True, but I mean, you've been forewarned. Presumably you've got some sort of idea, some sort of strategy in place too.
Well, I think that what Bermuda offers in terms of reinsurance is not just a tax thing, right? It is a combination. It's almost a virtuous circle. And tax is part of it. Obviously, we're a low-tax jurisdiction. Mm. We're not a no-tax jurisdiction.
No, but it's a corporate tax.
Believe me, as a tax man, I can tell everybody, and I tell people when they ask me overseas, that I'm the tax man, and I can assure you that companies in Bermuda pay taxes. Mm. And most of them don't like it. But having said all that, we're just keeping a watching brief and a very close watching brief on what happens in the U.S. and we'll see how it's going. It's not going to happen overnight, but our stakeholders in the insurance business are keeping us apprised of what they see and what they hear. We've got, we have people that talk to us directly. Sure. So we just have to see how it goes.
Because this tax haven thing just won't go away. I mean, you pointed out the Oxfam report recently was very erroneous.
Yeah.
Has government got a strategy to try and counter this at all levels, at all times? Because it always resurfaces.
We do not have a strategy to counter all things at all times, mainly because we don't have the resources to counter all things at all times.
So you're more reactionary.
So we are, we have a playbook. Obviously, with this Oxfam thing.
Well, you also gave an award for one recently, weren't you?
Yeah. So we have a playbook. And so when we have the kind of erroneous statement that came out last weekend from Oxfam, it didn't take us a long time to actually respond to it fulsomely, forcefully, and in detail. And it's because of the detail, I think, in particular, where we came from. And the contact we've made with other UK media. Mm-hmm. We have tried to cultivate the most influential media people in the area of tax and business. And so when they saw that, they immediately knew this was nonsense.
So you have actually been proactive.
Yeah, we have been proactive. So So, but you know, we haven't sort of been in a situation where we're putting out sort of messaging in the UK because it is still a sort of an irresistible urge in Britain to make scapegoats out of overseas territories. You know, there's a notion that we are defenseless, we're easy target, and that you can say anything about these guys, and that, you know, they're guilty by definition.
These Panama Papers and things like that don't exactly help, do they?
No, but I mean, you know, we haven't been mentioned in dispatches in Panama Papers, and that's one of the things that we have been able to say. And I recall I was at the anti-corruption summit in London earlier this year, and I was being interviewed by a BBC reporter, and I put it to him. I said, you know, you've been mentioned in Panama Papers, and we haven't. And I said, that's not an accident.
The Prime Minister was mentioned.
It's not an accident, and it's because of the way we do things here. And we've been doing it for a long, long time. So I think that that has kind of worked. But there will still always be sort of in the popular press these kinds of allegations made because they think that we're easy meat. And a lot of people in the street believe it, you know. And it always makes it worse for those people who either been to Bermuda once or twice as a tourist or have seen various videos of Bermuda, and they see the standard of living that we have here and the standard of living they have in Britain. And, you know, and the difference of the two is so stark. They say, well, you know, these guys over there got to be doing something wrong. So that's the kind of logic that gets applied by a lot of people.
Maybe they just think we're doing something right.
Yeah.
I mentioned the Fiscal Responsibility Panel report that came out quite recently. And just moving on, switching subjects a little bit, I suppose, well, obviously, switching subjects. They mentioned some of the good things that the government and yourself as finance minister have done in terms of reducing debt, but they're actually saying that there are other things, and I quote, while these announcements are welcome, however, implementation is presenting a challenge. And it goes on to say, as yet, there have been few actions of the kind that will be needed to improve efficiency and deliver significant further expenditure reductions over the years ahead. Now, it goes on to say that things like hiring freeze and early retirement are reaching the limits of their effectiveness. Mm. So what's behind, if you agree with this report that implementation is presenting a challenge, what is behind that issue there? What's the problem?
Well, I think that the facts are that the measures that we've taken so far have worked. They haven't worked as well as perhaps the Fiscal Responsibility Panel would like them to have worked. They haven't worked as well as we would have liked because we had a sort of glide path of cost reductions, and we are still above that glide path.
But this is presenting a challenge.
Yeah, it's presenting a challenge. You know, we had the furlough day per month, which was not renewed. So we had to find other ways to squeeze expenses out of the system. One of the things that is really sort of really topical that we're doing is that, you know, you really can't force efficiencies in an organization without there being accountability all the way through. I was really interested to hear the leader of the opposition refer to the Sage Commission and stuff that came out of the Sage Commission, and they kept us up to 6 o'clock in the morning trying to block the Sage Commission a few years ago. I found that to be somewhat amusing. But insofar as accountability is concerned, it's sort of like a stream flowing from a mountaintop. Accountability flows from the top down. Mm. Okay,
which is you?
No, it's not me. We're accountable to the people. We're talking about the civil service here, right? Accountability flows from the top of the civil service right down to the lowest person.
Mm-hmm.
What the Sage Commission pointed out was that at the senior most level of the civil service, there is no accountability. And so we had these regulations that came out just the other day
Which were
unfortunately they withdrawn because they did the latest version wasn't published, but they will be republished in the proper form. And those regulations were going to put accountability at the top of the civil service. You know, as married people, we all say every guy has a boss, right? We all have bosses. If you are in your own business, you still have a boss. Your bosses are your customers. If you're a CEO of a company, your board is your boss. Top of the civil service, that person did not have a boss. They weren't answerable to anybody. And so you couldn't force accountability down the organizational chart without the person at the top being accountable. So that's what these regulations are about.
Sure.
And once we can do that, we can sort of drive more accountability and more efficiency into the system.
So the challenge then that the fiscal responsibility panel is referring to is the challenge of getting the civil service to do it.
Enact
policy.
The accountability issue is a big issue, I think, in the civil service. And they made, as you know, the Sage Commission made a whole raft of recommendations. But it was made clear to me, I said, you know, Bob, it was one thing. If you can only do one thing, insofar as our recommendations are concerned, get that right.
Because, of course, those regulations you mentioned, the changing policy to try and get more accountability, have caused quite a lot of angst, haven't they?
Well, there was
a big discussion about that that I sorted out on social media.
Any change causes angst.
But this seemed to be about a fear of politicizing the civil service more than
it's not. You know, I think that that's a bit of an excuse. Just reiterate, everybody has to be accountable to somebody. And the accountability chain in the civil service was weak. And, you know, in other overseas territories, the deputy governor is in charge of civil service. In Bermuda, deputy governor is not. But it hasn't been the absence of the deputy governor at the top of the pyramid in Bermuda was never replaced by anybody or anything.
Mm.
And that's what these things are going to do. So I think it's going to be a really good thing. You know, everybody else other than the civil servants is in an organization that has accountability to the top. There's no excuse for the civil service not to be the same way.
When can we expect to see those regulations republished actually come into force?
I'm not exactly sure that that's in the Premier's domain.
Right.
But I know he worked very hard to get this out. But what happened here was just a glitch.
Mm.
And we'll get them out in pretty short order, I think.
The report also talks about the government has started the process of converting some departments into quangos. Could you go into a bit more detail about what's happening there?
Well, as and when necessary, what we're trying to do with the ones that I'm thinking of, which is the shipping registry and the airport registry, there was a question of resources there. Let's take the aircraft registry, for instance. In order for us to have an aircraft registry, we have to have inspectors of aircraft. And they have to be where the aircraft are, or close to them. So we have a number of aircraft inspectors in London that go out to inspect the various aircraft that are on our registry. That's a highly technical position.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are either pilots or former pilots. there's a fair amount of competition for that talent. And so you have to have a remuneration structure that can pay these guys, or else, you know, they're going to go to somebody else. The civil service structure in Bermuda didn't allow for that.
Right.
So what you had is that we were not able to expand that register because there has to be a sort of ratio between the number of planes on the register and the number of inspectors.
Right.
If you get the number of planes exceeds that ratio, then people are going to wonder about the quality of the register.
Yeah.
So in order to expand that register, we have to have more inspectors. Can't get more inspectors under the current circumstance. So we can't increase the earnings to the island under the current circumstance. So if you spin it off as a quango, it'll be free of the civil service structure in terms of remuneration concern.
Right.
We'll be able to get more inspectors, be able to expand the registry and get more revenue to the government. So that's the basic goal.
So is it going to be areas such as the aircraft registry? Is it going to be anything else you're looking at?
I don't think of, I mean, we're doing a quango for the airport. But that's more of a regulatory structure, not a sort of, not necessarily a money earner for the government. But we haven't taken a policy decision to chop up the government to make it into quangos. We've done it in areas where we think there'll be a financial benefit to consolidated fund. I mean, that's been the criteria so far.
Because a lot of people will see that as a backdoor move to privatization.
No, it's just, it really isn't. It's just an ability to get, we have certain areas of government that provide services that will never make money, that are just services to the public. I mean, you know, the best thing is that public education will never be a moneymaker, okay? But there are certain things that are moneymakers.
Right.
And what we're trying to do is to make them have a structure that'll enhance the revenue for the government, because let's face it, we need as much revenue as we can get.
But you will take the profit from those quangos.
Yes, we will.
The government coffers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I want to continue on with the report, the fiscal responsibility report, because it does make the point again, unfunded liabilities of government pension and health insurance schemes will need to be addressed. It says by a combination of increases in contributions and changes in terms. Now, we've had the increase in HIP recently. Mm. This is obviously a pretty critical issue. What are you guys going to do about it? Are we going to expect to see more increases in health insurance? Are we going to have to increase our pension contributions?
Yeah, I can't answer that question right now. These things are under a regular review. We had an actuarial report on the pension funds come in, I guess, at the end of last summer. We were able to give people increases in payouts and pension. We also increased contributions as well. And I think we're due for another kind of actuarial review for health insurance and those matters.
But if you said you can't go into that right now, you're waiting for the report.
Yeah.
What's your gut feeling there?
I think that we have this issue that the fiscal responsibility panel talked about, which is the demographic issue.
Mm.
You know, this is a train that is moving that nobody, at least at this point in time, knows how to stop.
No, and successive governments, I think, around the world have put that in.
Well, that's right. Quite frankly, what the FRP actually suggested, you know, we need to sort of get more young people in here through immigration.
Well, I was going to come on to that.
Well, you know, that's going to be a tough sell to a lot of Bermudians.
It is, but again, the panel mentions that. I was going to come on to
that
later on.
That's right. So you need the healthy young people to be able to pay for people like me, you know, the older people whose wheels are falling off the wagon. That's obviously how that kind of insurance or pension health thing works. You just can't bring people into Bermuda to sit around.
No.
In other words, the economy has to demand them, and at the end of the day, you still have to have an immigration policy that puts Bermudians first. We were fortunate enough up until 2008 where the economy was at such a state that there was a demand for extra people from abroad to come in to do jobs that there weren't enough Bermudians for. But we are trying to get the economy back up to a stage where that natural private sector demand for people from abroad comes back. We're not there yet.
Well, that's not going to fill the gap, is it? I mean, the report makes a point that the healthcare needs and the pension needs constitutes an additional reason for tackling the debt overhang quickly.
That's right.
So you've got a double-edged sword here.
I agree.
So
with
even
that.
If you get people in quickly,
well, you know,
why I asked if there's going to be increases.
Because
that's the easy way to go, isn't it?
You can't get I just want to dispel the notion. You can't press a button and get people in.
No,
right?
I understand. The easy option for you would be to press a button and say, right, in the next budget, we're going to increase.
That option doesn't really exist, right? The best we can do is to try to balance a budget using the facilities that we have now. And I think we're in very good shape to do that. I, at the beginning of this year, I promised to balance the budget in 3 years. The first of the 3 years is almost up, and so we'll continue. I'm quite confident that we're continuing on that route to get to that end.
I'm going to come on to that as well. You're obviously reading my mind, or you've read my questions. I don't know. I want to talk about the immigration issue first of all, because again, the report says you've got to have positive net immigration of people of a working age. Now, we saw what happened when the immigration reform was going to be debated in the House. We know it's been discussed now that the committee is looking at it. How confident are you that you can push through some the necessary immigration reforms that will bring in more people here?
Again, my view is that that process is independent of what we really need, right? What we really need is an economy that demands people to come in, right? You can mess around with all that sort of stuff all you like. If ABC company doesn't require anybody from abroad to grow, there's going to be net immigration of zero. It doesn't matter what laws we pass, okay? So the crucial thing here is to expand economic growth to such an extent that the growth demands people to come in, okay? When we had a contraction that lasted 6 years, a whole lot of people went. And, of course, there was a kind of feedback loop on that because more people went, the slower the economy was, and more people went on top of that.
It's a vicious circle, yeah.
So what we need is to reestablish that virtuous circle, okay? And I suspect that we're not there yet with the state of the economy, but we got to work to get there. And so these rules as it relate to immigration don't really affect this equation, in my view, right? It's more of a political equation than an economic equation.
Okay, so you're looking purely at the economic case.
Yeah.
Okay, so where are we with economic growth?
We're better than we were, but not where we want to be.
What is economic? Can you give a percentage? Do most countries say expect the economy to grow by 1.2%?
We need to have real growth in this country of about 3%.
And what are we doing?
1.25%.
Right.
Right? So, but, you know, you've got to crawl before you walk, walk before you run.
But in the meantime, you've still got these imbalances to address.
That's right.
Shortfall in pensions, shortfall in health, and the debt, which is increasing.
Of all of that lot, the one that is by far the most critical is the debt.
Yeah.
And so while I appreciate and agree with the aspects of pensions, to me, the pension issue is not, in Tom Clancy's word, a clear and present danger. The clear and present danger is the debt and the deficit. Perhaps the most clear and present danger of them all is the deficit itself. You can't get rid of the debt until you stop the deficit. So our focus has been on reducing that deficit to zero. And so if we don't do that, we can't fix anything else.
And the report, again, I'm gonna keep on about this report. I'm sorry, but I think there's a lot of meat in it.
Sure it is.
The report again says deficit reduction is expected to then accelerate in 2017-2018. We're kind of missing out next financial year with the planned introduction of a reform payroll tax and a modest reduction of spending by about 2%. And it says this means that 2017-2018 sees a much sharper tightening of the fiscal policy than previously planned. Are we going to feel a bit of an ouch factor here?
What we're doing is to craft a budget and a fiscal plan where we have to increase the revenues of the government. I've said that already. That's not news.
But you're also going to have a 2% cut in spending. It says.
But we have to have the spending cuts and we have to have the revenue increase.
2% is a lot.
We have to have both, okay? The I guess the effort that we're making, and I think we're going to be successful in this effort, is to spread the pain, if you like, across a broader number of sectors than heretofore. I've made the case many times that we are a service economy, and so much of our revenue comes from imported goods. So we have to try to make that shift away from imported goods. Imported goods are a really small part of the Bermuda economy, so that we can spread that revenue burden, that tax burden, over a broader representation of the economy. And that's part of what we're doing. I talked about the general service tax. Mm. we are going to do some alterations of payroll tax. Mm. That should be expected in the next budget. We've been in consultation with stakeholders in industry. And I'm not expecting anybody to like it. It's just not possible for people to like this sort of thing. What our objective is to have reform of payroll tax that increases fairness. That's the first.
Well, you want a progressive payroll tax.
Increases fairness and increases revenue at the same time. And I think we have a formula to do that.
Can I just ask then that, bearing in mind the economic growth is about half of where you want it to be, bearing in mind we've got these other pressures, bearing in mind that you're going to forecast a 2% cut in your budget, are you relying really heavily on tax increases to fund the budget deficit?
We're relying on tax increases and cost cuts. We've been successful in cutting down the size of the civil service. We cut down the size of the civil service by over 500 people.
Right. Again, but that's, as the report says, that's coming to an end now through early retirements, et cetera.
I know, we're going to keep putting the early retirements. We're going to keep doing that, right? And what has been perhaps surprising and undocumented to a certain extent, that there is real evidence that there are people leaving the civil service to go out and work in private industry. I mean, when we took over, that clearly wasn't the case. Mm. Because private industry wasn't hiring. But I can tell you, the private sector is hiring now. And we are losing our staff to the private sector.
Does that make it more tempting to actually introduce a policy of actually redundancies in the civil service?
No, we're not. We told...
Because you made the point at a press conference. I remember you being quite agitated at saying not one job has been lost.
No, we haven't laid off anybody. People will leave for their own personal reasons.
But if the private sector is picking up, does that make it more tempting for
you? No. I said that we haven't done that. We won't do that. But a lot of people have left the civil service voluntarily. Some of them to go get other work in the private sector. Some of them to retire. And some of those that have retired haven't really sort of gone off and sat on the beach. A lot of them have gone and started up their own small businesses. So the notion of assisting people with small business is also, I think, a feature that we want to have going forward.
Can you tell me a little bit more about the payroll tax reforms? Are you on schedule to introduce those in the next budget? Because the report makes a point that actually see an urgent need for extra resources in the Office of Tax Commissioner and Finance Ministry or risk delays.
Yeah, we are on track for reform for payroll tax.
Can you give us a general outline without giving too many things away from your budget about what we can see?
I can't give too much away. The only thing I can say is that we've made some resource changes in the tax commissioner's office. But the thing about what we're doing with payroll tax is that it doesn't require us to pass any new laws or anything like that, or not much anyway. There are one or two small things. And it's not requiring us to have a whole bunch of new people either. The changes that mostly had to be made were programming changes to software and stuff like that. And that has pretty much been done. We are on schedule for that, which I promised in March of last year. We're on schedule to have that happen this April.
Earlier this year, of course, you said the general services tax, sales tax, was on hold. Are we going to see that again?
Well, it wasn't scheduled for this current year coming up. Was never scheduled for this current year. What we'll be doing in the next fiscal year is to be more active in a consultancy type of program with our stakeholders in the private sector to come up with something that works. What hadn't happened and what the fiscal responsibility panel was talking about was that they came back a year later and found out that we really hadn't done much on GST at all, and that we were concentrating on payroll tax reform, and there'll be other bits and pieces that will come out in the budget speech as well. But we have to do this thoughtfully, carefully, in a way that's as least disruptive as possible. But mostly, I found and I observed from not my experience, but experience of others, particularly my predecessor, that the key thing here is people hate surprises.
Mm-hmm.
Except for pleasant surprises, of course.
Tax refund is always nice.
Yeah. You know, people like surprises at the birthday present or Christmas present. They hate unpleasant surprises. And the big error of the former government was to just go up there, which they could legally empower to do, go up on the hill and say, look, your taxes have gone up, without any consultation, without any warning. So we have been actively engaged with the private sector on payroll tax reform.
Okay.
So that when I do walk up on the hill and disclose this, people who have probably the most at stake will not be surprised.
For those who don't know, when you talk about a progressive tax, you get a higher end. You get a higher tax rate at the top income and a lower tax rate at the bottom.
That's correct.
Okay, so all those guys earning $500,000 are going to get a tax higher.
I reckon so.
Excuse me. And all the executives you've talked to are okay about it?
Well, they understand what has to be done. They understand what has to be done. They have reiterated just up until, Monday or Tuesday, that, you know, they're committed to Bermuda.
Right.
But the message I got was that, you know, they understand that it's not something they would have liked, but they understand the situation. They're business people. They understand the situation of the government. They want the government to be sustainable. Okay. So they know they have to play their part.
And you're confident that they'll stay here?
Yes, I am. And I've worked hard at this interchange of information to try to make sure that they stay here. Right? That and I think the exodus that happened before was an exodus because it was a nasty surprise as opposed to something that's explained. They're also keen to have. They're also keen to see fairness in the system. You know, that's one of them told me that, you know, we don't want to be the only ones that are hit. So I get that. As I mentioned in the budget speech earlier, that we have a notional system for either self-employed people or people who are professionals.
The notional system where
there was quite a bit of evidence of abuse, and we've already started to crack down on that, and we're going to continue to do that.
Just so those who are watching, just very briefly explain the notional system.
Okay.
Because my understanding is, in theory, I could pay myself a dollar and pay tax on a dollar.
Well, yeah, if you have your own business, if it's a small business, you're probably in the service business, you're a professional of some sort. You can have a notional salary of something like a dollar is a bit ridiculous, but you could have a notional salary of say $40,000 a year. You can't hire a waiter for $40,000 a year, but you got a notional of $40,000 a year. So you pay payroll tax based on $40,000 a year. Meanwhile, the rest of what you earn, which could be another $300,000 or $400,000 or $500,000, if you're a professional, you're a successful professional, maybe even $1 million, right? That goes completely untaxed. And
so how are you making headway on that thing? Because that's a significant earner for you.
I think in aggregate, throughout the whole economy, it's not that big, but it's a fairness issue again, right? And you know, Bermuda's a small country, so we know people like this, right? You know. We know people like this personally.
Hmm.
So I don't think it's going to make a huge difference in aggregate. But again, people don't mind paying their fair share of taxes. What they mind is that for them paying their fair share and the guy next to them not paying their fair share. That's what they really mind. They really don't. They don't like that.
Okay. Right? I think we've reported on the fiscal responsibility panel enough. And of course, there is one topic, as you know, exactly what I'm going to talk about now is the airport.
Oh, really?
Now,
it's a very surprise.
there's been an incredible amount of what I would call noise surrounding this. I'm sort of hoping as much as anything to put some questions to you to try and get a clarity, or at least from your point of view, some clarity, and then put out there some issues that people can digest, hopefully more clearly. Now then, one of the things is that you're pretty committed to this in more ways than one, because you actually want to do the airport, you believe in the development quite clearly. But isn't there some sort of almost a golden handcuffs for you if you pull out now, or the longer you go on, the more you have to pay to pull out?
Well, yes. The other partners, particularly Aecon, have spent a whole lot of money that we haven't paid for. Again, you know, we were just talking about fairness. Think about this. They have done all kinds of engineering studies. They have done architectural work, done design work. Now, if we, for instance, if we sign the project agreement today, they'll be in a position to start tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
They won't, you know, it's not a situation where if we sign the project agreement today, then they'd have to go out and make their plans, get their engineering, and all that sort of stuff. They've been doing that all along. The only thing that they would probably have to do would be to get the subcontractors, the Bermudian subcontractors, chosen and up to speed. So there's a lot of parallel work that's been done, and therefore and has not been paid for by anyone in Bermuda. So if we were to walk away for whatever reason, it's very clearly set out in the airport development agreement on what we call off-ramps.
Mm-hmm.
If we've gotten so far down the track now, that those off-ramps would be very expensive.
How much?
I think it's about 18 to 20 million.
Okay, I read 23 million in
the report. When you add, there's some sort of penalty clause on the, when you add the penalty clauses, I think the last thing I heard was 24. It ended up being 24 with the penalty clauses.
So you're basically too far on the line now to pull out.
And we're not going to pull out.
But even if you are too far down the line, I'm thinking that when it comes back to the House in February at some stage, there's not really much you can do anyway, is there?
No.
With that amount of money involved to pull out.
We've stated repeatedly and emphatically that the government of Bermuda is committed to this project. We're committed to the project.
End of story.
Yeah.
I'm going to come on to some of the other issues.
It's good for Bermuda. We'll provide employment with people in a sector that's really been hard hit, the construction sector. We're talking about, you know, upwards of 200 jobs, construction jobs. I mean, just think about this. The entity that people have been calling Aecon is not Aecon at all. It's a company called Bermuda Skyport Corporation. It's partially owned by Aecon. Now, Skyport is looking to employ more people down there. Just think about it this way. The Department of Airport Operations currently employs, I don't know, about 33, 34 people. Most of their overhead, you know, IT, HR, all those kinds of things, that's all done by the government.
Sure.
Once they become Skyport, they've got to do those things for themselves. So they're going to hire more people, a lot more people, actually. So this thing is a job creator, right? And I find it to be incredibly ironic that individuals and organizations whose reason for being is to support workers, that they could be against a project that is going to benefit working people so much.
As I understand, a lot of their objections are about the money going out of Bermuda, and it's something I want to look at and search on later on.
Okay.
But beforehand, you're not concentrating on the commercial side, are you? That's a completely different project.
I'm not sure what you mean.
So in terms of cargo side, that's something all different altogether, isn't it? It's not involved, not included in the
Skyport will be obliged to build a new freight shed and take care of cargo.
Is that at their own cost?
Yes.
So how will that be financed?
They'll have the cash flow for it.
So that's going to be, so the existing operations now will be taken over by Skyport.
Yeah, that's all part of the airport operation run by government. They'll take over that. Yeah.
Okay, because that's not really been explored very much. Can you tell me how that's going to work a bit?
Well, you know, we have this airport, we have this freight shed down there that sort of dates back to the beginning of time.
Dilapidated,
right. Yeah. That's going to be ultimately replaced. Now, most of that whole part of that airport is going to be demolished.
Yeah.
They're going to have to clearly put up something for a freight shed before the freight shed is demolished. But that has all been incorporated into the financial plans of Skyport. And it's going to be all part of the finance that they're borrowing to run this thing. It's all part of their plan.
So it's not part of the PPP, though?
Yeah, it's all part of the PPP. That's the plan. Right?
Okay.
That is part of the package. Okay. We have to have a freight shed. There's going to be a new freight shed.
Because that's never really been mentioned in context before.
Mm. Well,
is that adding additional cost to this then?
It's part of the cost.
Okay, so what is the cost?
Well, there's the $267 million for the terminal. There are, $19 million for, I think it's $19
million. $16 million
for the demolition. And there are financial costs involved as well, right? Which take it up to about, if you put in all of the insurance, it's $304 or $305 million. So, yeah.
Because I have actually read these reports. It took some time. Mm. And there is a cost in there of something like $400 million.
No, there's no $400 million.
Definitely not. Okay, no. So what's going to be the total payback cost?
Payback cost?
Mm. This is a PPP. You pay the ACON's going to pay interest on it. When you've added the interest on the money that they're borrowing, what's the payback cost?
Well, I don't think that there's such a thing as in finance as the payback cost. It's either payback period.
Okay, what's the cost plus interest?
Or there's net present value, or is internal rate of return.
What's the cost plus interest?
I don't know what the cost plus interest is. I do know that as thing you go forward in time, you don't calculate it as a cost plus interest. You calculate it as a net present value. You do it backwards. That's the standard
way of
doing
it. Okay, but from a public point of view, it might be worth understanding what the total cost of this project is going to be. It gives them an idea of the scale. It gives them an idea of what the project cost is materially to actually put it there, and then the final cost to actually pay it all off over 30
years. But
that
would not be a proper representation of the cost, Jeremy. That's what I'm trying to tell you. You listen to me, okay? A dollar today and a dollar 25 years from now is not the same dollar, okay? You have
but you can do it based on current day prices.
You cannot do it on current day prices. Nobody in finance does it that way. Okay? So because a dollar today is worth more than a dollar 20 years from now, right? And that's why I've just been finished telling you that when you see, and then you've read it, you see cash flow reports that deal with net present value to evaluate the project. That is how the professionals do it. The thing that you're suggesting, nobody who knows finance does it that way.
I'm obviously from the UK. I'm used to their version of PFI, which is PPP. Sorry, used to their version of PFI, PPP. I've seen total cost payback. I've seen stories about it, so I thought it was a legitimate question to ask, frankly.
Okay, but you look. I know you've told me before we started that you've looked through all of the papers that we provided, and you don't see any mention of that.
No, not at all.
Because it is not a real number. I mean, let me put it this way, without trying to seem too, if you like, pompous, right? Because you can do arithmetic doesn't mean that you can do finance. Right? You can add up the numbers, and the numbers may not mean anything, okay? So that's what we have here. When you evaluate a project like this, you take all the cash flows, and you discount them back to the present, and that discount has to do with how much money you may have had if you deposited the money in the bank today, if you had the money today. So when you see all those calculations based on net present value, that is how the professionals evaluate projects.
If everything goes according to plan, work is due to start next year. When will the entire project be completed? What's the kind of time scale that we're looking at?
It's supposed to be 40 months.
40 months for everything?
Yeah.
Including the cargo?
Yeah.
Okay. And what will go where the old airport was?
Where the old airport is going to be demolished except for the departures lounge, where that's going to be converted into offices.
Okay. So that's anything that's going to be left standing.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we've got problems getting to the airport at the moment. One bridge is still there that's meant to be temporary, the other one's undergoing repairs.
Yeah.
It seems a bit odd to have a $305 million airport with bridges that can't necessarily
themselves,
take the traffic.
Themselves need to be looked at.
Oh, indeed. For what's happening those?
Yeah. I think that to their credit, the former government had plans to rebuild the causeway. I've seen them.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like the airport itself, they hadn't figured out how to finance it. I haven't spent a great deal of time figuring that out either, because I've been concentrating on this. But I think the government is well aware that the present causeway, it needs to be replaced.
Mm.
I'm amazed, quite frankly, that, you know, we've had a causeway across that gap for about 100 years in various shapes and forms. I've seen old pictures of it almost like being a pontoon bridge. I'm astonished that we keep, every time it gets battered by whatever hurricane, we keep building it the same way. This thing is not, the design itself is lends itself to get destroyed by storm. It's too low to the water. So the plans that I had, that I saw, it was done by the previous government, solved that problem. All right, it was sort of like a viaduct that was high enough to where the waves go right under it. Okay, but again, we have to figure out how to finance that, and we haven't got there yet, but we're well aware that it needs to be done.
You haven't got there yet, but you're going to have to get there at some stage.
We're going to have to get there some.
Even if you don't win the next election, the PLP is going to have to get there. What kind of plans were being looked at?
Well,
and how much did they cost?
The price tag I saw was about $100 million. We may be able to get it done for less. But
Would that be a PPP?
Maybe. I don't know. I haven't spent much time looking at it. I'm concentrating on it. You've got to, got to do this one.
Oh, I understand, but there's not.
Once we get started with this, then I can start thinking about that.
You can go to the Switzerland and have a look at the nice, shiny airport, but you might not be able to get there.
Mm.
So they do need to go hand in glove somewhat.
But you got to do things as rapidly as you can. You know, if you remove your concentration from one thing, you may not just not hit the ball at all. Right? Just keep your eye on the ball. Once you make contact, then you get to the next ball.
One of the most contentious issues has been the minimum revenue guarantee. Now, reading through the report, as far as I can see, that involves government making up potentially any losses based on the passenger figures from 2015, which were the record low. Is that correct? So if you go below the 2015 level...
I do not think that is a proper explanation. First of all, let me explain the minimum revenue guarantee. Minimum regulated revenue guarantee has been put in there to support the debt.
Mm-hmm.
It has not been there.
It's necessary for the investors as well. But anyway, yeah.
That is not correct. So let us get the facts straight. The minimum regulated revenue guarantee is to support the lenders of the debt. Okay? It is not there to support equity investors at all. There are clauses in the agreement that prevent any of that money, if it happens to be put into that account, from going to equity investors. So that's the first thing. Secondly, what we have in this project is a traffic estimate for every year going out for the next 30 years. Okay.
Yeah, so 822,000 passenger increase by 2040.
Every year.
Which seems astonishing.
And the rate of growth for traffic in these projections is 0.75% a year. That's very modest. Less than 0.75% a year growth for the next 30 years. So it's a very conservative growth estimate. Not what you heard and what was on your last program.
That's what I read in here.
Right? So it's 0.75% growth. Right? There's some allowance for a blip and for America's Cup.
Yeah.
But it's 0.75%. So it's not heroic. It's conservative. So what we have, and that's the core case. That's the.
And that's the growth based on 2015 figures.
That's right. Now, we have that scenario. Then you have the worst case scenario. And every year there is a worst case scenario. And what the minimum revenue guarantee says, that if traffic for any particular year is below the worst case scenario, the government will put money into a trust fund to make up that difference. That trust fund money will be there in the unlikely event, but in the event that Skyport is not able to meet its debt service. And that money will be used to help Skyport to meet its debt service.
Is that money going anyway, or does that money only go in if it goes below the 2015 levels?
It goes into a trust account and stays there until the event that they cannot meet their debt service.
So it goes in there every year anyway?
No. It only goes in there if the traffic for the previous year is below the worst case scenario.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So the money will go in there, and then it will stay in there unless the company is in distress. And after the debt is paid off, if there's money in that account, it comes back to the government of Bermuda. That's how the minimum revenue guarantee works.
Immediately. It doesn't stay in there for a length of time.
The money stays in there until the debt is paid, then it'll come back to Bermuda. Yes.
Until the debt is paid, so 30 years.
That's in the debt, you know, that's right. If the debt, until the debt is repaid. So it's there to support the debt. But it is not a guarantee of the debt.
Mm-hmm. No, okay? I understand that. Yeah.
But a lot of people don't.
But you call it guarantee, maybe it's a misnomer, you should call it something else.
Well, it's a minimum revenue guarantee, right? It is not a guarantee of the debt. That debt could get not paid for a zillion other reasons, okay? People will cheat, steal. I mean, it's not part of that.
Right.
It's not like the hospital.
Right.
The government of Bermuda guarantees the debt on the hospital, irrespective of what goes on down there. That's not what it is. So this does not go on government of Bermuda's books as a contingent liability. We have that verified, as you read the papers.
Yeah.
You have it verified by KPMG that this will not go on government's accounts as a contingent liability.
So the success of this airport depends almost entirely on the success of tourism. And that's a statement of the obvious, but in terms of actually not committing government to any expenditure, you're entirely in the hands of increasing in tourism.
I think that we can control everything except the phone. This project depends on the success of Bermuda, right? Bermuda in international business
says, the estimates of economic benefits are highly dependent on the underlying traffic forecast, and the benefits do not accrue solely to the airport. They're talking about actually increasing tourism numbers.
Yeah, and guess what? We're doing a pretty good job of doing that.
But over 30 years.
Yeah.
Don't know what's going to happen. Chances are there'll be another recession.
The only thing I can say to you, Jeremy, is this. If you take a negative view, right?
I'm deliberately taking a negative view.
If you take a negative view,
I can find out the answers.
If you take a negative view, then you won't be able to get up from your bed every morning, right?
I do that every morning.
Obviously, you don't take that negative view where you don't get up. If you take a negative view, you will never do anything. What we're doing here is taking a conservative view, but a positive view.
So explain to me, when you say conservative view, one thing that completely confused me in this report, so we were talking about an extra 820,000 passengers by 2014.
Not an extra, 820,000. You know, it basically what this thing does projects over 30 years that we'll get back to the top level that we got back to in the first place. They've given us 30 years to get there. So it is not heroic.
20 years to get there.
Okay?
Well, 20 years, 2014. Yeah.
I mean, we got all kinds of misinformation going out here on this. I just want to say one or two things here, okay? On the report that you did last time, the opposition leader said that we will get increased departure taxes by 136%. You know how much departure taxes are going to go up by?
$20.
2%, right? And if you add on all the other things, like airport infrastructure fee, it's 29%. I mean, that's the kind of thing that is, I have to correct before I run out of time. The other thing is that he said over and over again that we're going to privatize this airport. This is not privatization. Anybody who everybody in Bermuda who's been to the UK has gone to Gatwick, and Gatwick is privatized. It's owned by a group headed up by an African guy. Heathrow is privatized. They own and operate both Gatwick and Heathrow and City Airport. That's privatization. The Bermuda government will continue to own this airport. From the time they lay one block down there, even though this other company, Skyport, will borrow the money, will pay back the money, the Bermuda government and people will own that building.
I want to come back to that ownership. There's a couple of things I must get asked first, ask about first, and that is the costs. I read in the report that the TAC concession is in the region of $50
million. $50 million per what?
Overall.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. And one of the reports said there is a risk that $50 million allowance does not fully cover all costs. So could it be more?
No, that's the costs for the... but that risk is for the concessionaire, not for the government.
Okay. And then we have the energy subsidy that's some $2.6 million
a
year. Right. So for 30 years, if my maths is correct, and hopefully use my calculator correctly, that's $78 million. So we do have a cost of some $128
million. That is not correct. That is not correct. Let me make this very clear.
Please do.
Okay.
Because that's what comes out of the report.
All right. Let me make this very clear. We have made contributions. We, the government, are going to make contributions to this. We're a partner making contributions. Aecon, our partner, they're making contributions. They're building it, financing it. CCC, they're making their contributions, right? They're guaranteeing performance. Okay. Of those contributions that we're making, electricity subsidy, the so-called retained services like ground electronics,
air
weather
control,
service, air traffic control, fire,
yeah,
right?
In the report.
Okay. Those
$8.8 million.
Those add up to almost $18 million, right?
18.2.
All that, the only thing that is extra for the Bermuda government is what we're doing to form the Quango, right? All of that other stuff we pay for already.
Well, we don't pay for the energy subsidy.
Yes, we do. Who pays for the electricity on the airport now? We do. So there's not any
extra. So we do pay $2.6 million
a year for that? That's right. That's where that number comes from, right? So... we're not paying any extra for that. So it is not an extra cost for the government. It is our contribution to the project, but it's not an extra cost to the government. The extra cost has to do with formation of that Quango and the transfer of the regulated revenues to Skyport.
Okay, so
that's
we're coming up against time, so I do need to ask this question. You mentioned there's no extra cost to government, but there is extra cost to the user. Can you tell me what the airport infrastructure charge of $32.81 is? Am I paying that if I leave the airport?
As I said to you, if you take in all of those charges from before we do this to after, there's going to be an increase of 29%.
But 29% from what to what? I mean, you know,
well, you know, we
is that $10 to $12.90?
What
is it? $32.81
is a lot. It is not a lot. Right.
Well, if I see a ticket.
You know, as I said, the airport, the departure tax goes up by $2. There are other charges. What people want to know, how much they're going to pay, how much extra they're going to pay. I'm telling them what they're going to pay.
But what is the airport infrastructure charge?
That is we right now pay an airport infrastructure fee, which will come to an end when we sign the agreement. That is basically to continue to help to pay for this project.
Sure.
But
it actually says today there's a blank.
Yeah.
Proposed 2017, 3281.
Right.
So is that what I'm going to, is that what I, you as a resident of Bermuda, will pay towards the
airport? On this piece of paper, you will see what that 29% that I'm talking about is right in front of you. Okay?
But the 3281.
Yeah.
What is the airport infrastructure charge?
It's part of the charges that you're going to pay.
Right.
Just like the airport tax.
Okay.
Departure thing.
So that the user will pay that?
The user will pay, I just finished saying, the user will pay another 29%.
29% is not the end of that, unless I know what, from what it is, from what to what.
Well, you know, I think the average person can calculate 29%.
It's a threat. Right? Yes, I know, but I mean, is it $10 to $12.90? It's all relative. It's a low number.
It's a low number. You know, and it's a low number, and it's a number that will enable us to continue to be competitive with our competitors.
Because it is one of the things, I mean, the government and the OBA are being very clever, putting out lots of literature, saying, do you want to increase our debt? No, of course, it is a debt. It's just not a debt to government.
That's right. It's not a debt to government.
But it's a debt to me.
It's not a debt to you.
but I'm going to pay for it.
You'll only pay for it when you travel, my friend.
I'm still paying for it.
But that's not a debt. A debt is something you're obliged to pay irrespective. If you don't want to pay anything, don't travel.
If I don't travel, Minister, the revenue guarantee might kick in, so I'm going to pay for it anyway.
This airport will be paid for by users.
Yeah.
Right? As simple as airlines and passengers. It will not be paid for by the government. Okay? And that's the difference. If it gets paid for by the government, government debt goes up, and we defeat the whole purposes that we talked about earlier in this interview. And that is,
yes,
and that is the reason that we have chosen this model, because this model enables us to create those jobs, to create infrastructure, which will be a basis for further growth for this economy, to do all those things without harming the most vulnerable part of our economic status, which is the debt. So that's why this government has chosen this model. It's a great model for us. You know, if somebody in 2006 who wanted to build this airport had decided we're going to put $10, $20 million aside every year for 10, 20, 15 years so that we'll be able to afford to do this airport. If somebody had said that then, hey, we wouldn't be having this conversation now.
But nobody did that.
And, you know, I wouldn't have expected them to. And, you know, when they did the hospital, the debt is on our books. But you know what? When we built the hospital and when they considered building the hospital, the government was not in the precarious situation that we're in now. So you can't blame them for doing it that way. But don't tell me that, you know, there's something wrong with having Skyport operate the airport. There's something terribly wrong with that. But they are operating it because they're assuming the debt for us. So they have to operate it to make sure that that debt gets repaid.
We've just about run out of time, so I've got one more question just to wrap up.
We can go overtime if you like, right?
New Year is only, what, 3 weeks away, 2 weeks away today as Finance Minister?
One New Year's resolution is that we are able to, as Finance Minister, as opposed to personally,
as Finance Minister, yeah.
We are able to execute our plan for deficit reduction. It's still a challenge, but I think we can do it. And to execute that plan in a way that is least disruptive for Bermuda and Bermudians.
Okay, on that note, thank you very much for your time, Minister.
Pleasure.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
All right.
Thank you for tuning in to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com, your 24/7 Bermuda news source.